Hour three of the show. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, and we welcome in our audience on TSN 2. Mark Rowan for Brian Hayes alongside Gord Miller. Darren Dreger is going to join us in a couple of minutes with the latest on Zach Hyman, on other trades that maybe Seattle. We thought today would maybe be a little busier when it came to the Kraken. And as you pointed out, they're not making, at least not yet, the kind of deals that we saw so much from Vegas.
No. And we also thought there'd be more trades that we heard. There were some trades in the hopper today. The only one they did is moved Pitlick to Calgary.
Right.
Now, there's still more shoes to drop here, and there's the draft tomorrow. So they may have stuff in place that they're just going to drop tomorrow. But it's a different philosophy. I think one of the things that people criticize Seattle, look at the guys they picked. Well, first of all, you're not taking 30 guys on one-way contracts.
Yeah.
So you do need some guys that are going to play in the American League.
Yeah.
So you're not taking 30, you don't want to get stuck with 30 one-way contracts.
30 guys all battling for
same spots. And by a one-way contract, we should explain, that means you get paid the same in the NHL and the American League.
Right. Like I'm assuming John Quenneville is on a two-way deal.
I would think so,
because he was an AHL player.
And you know what? And people say, why would you take Morgan Geekie instead of taking Jake Bean? Well, Ron Francis was there in Carolina. Morgan Geekie has scored at every level up to the NHL. So he must believe, and Geekie can really shoot it. Mm-hmm. He can really shoot the puck. So there's people in Seattle being critical about selecting players that, to be honest, they've never seen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. I mean, I read some of the Seattle clips. They've never seen these players.
No, it's everything's so new. Although it's funny.
But there's also people in other markets that, have never seen. Like, you're gonna hear tomorrow night for the draft, people are going to criticize, someone for taking someone. And they've never seen the player.
Sure.
They've literally never watched them.
Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Remember the outcry that Montreal, I did find it interesting that here you have this new market. It's a clean slate. And they're still booing Gary Batman.
They want to fit in.
They want to fit in.
They want to feel welcome.
Yeah.
Remember the one time he said, "Oh, come on, you can do better than that." He's interesting, because you talk about someone who doesn't mind saying unpopular things, and someone who doesn't mind, and who will not, if he believes in the direction he's going, will not waver. And that is Gary Batman, and he's been proven right. Way more, he's been proven right way more than he's been proven wrong. People criticized him coming out of the lockout in 2004-05, the TV deals he did with OLN, and it didn't look like a great deal. It turned out to be a blockbuster deal for the NHL. Mm. It turned into a huge deal for the, and the partnership with, NBC wound up buying OLN, and that partnership turned out to be great. So it's hard, he fought. It's funny because the places they hate him most are in Canada. If it wasn't for him, there'd be no team in Ottawa. There wouldn't be a team in Calgary, and there wouldn't be a team in Edmonton.
Right.
And now you can say, well, Winnipeg and Quebec left, but there was literally no local ownership. Well, and there was no sign of a new.
The reaction is you're going to all these other cities, and there's not a second team in Toronto, or there's not a team in Hamilton, or you didn't. Quebec City is waiting there on arena.
And why
you can
and
always
why,
find.
Why
a
are
way.
You propping up Arizona? Why are you doing? But at the end of the day, listen. If you own an NHL team, Gary Bettman, you couldn't ask for a better commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at franchise values, look at the revenue streams, where they were and where they are now, it's a much better business. The salary cap alone, which I don't like, but, as an owner, you love it.
You like the Premier League.
I like the Premier League. I do like the Premier League.
A lot of people in the city like the Premier League right now.
They would like the Premier League. They would like the Premier League. I'm not a big fan of the salary cap. I do find it interesting that, owners who proclaim themselves as great capitalists fight for the entry draft, restrictions on free agency.
Yeah.
They want taxpayer funded arenas, salary caps. All that stuff.
All the things that our next guest has to tweet about almost on a daily basis.
And he's sick of hearing about it from me.
Our hockey insider, Darren Dreger, joining us. What's up, Dregs? How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good. Do you like the salary cap? Because Gord hates it.
Well, that's because Gord is a wealthy man. and
what?
Yeah, he's not worried about the little people. Yeah. I would like to see an amendment to the salary cap. Ray Ferraro and I talk about this often on the podcast. I think that the mechanism of the salary cap could be tweaked moving forward, where you have a franchise allotment or some sort of structure where, okay, maybe there's some type of penalty, whatever that penalty is. But it allows for creativity, and it juices the market a little bit. But you abandon the salary cap, and then your small market teams just get swallowed up in the process. Well, so that would be my concern.
Well, Dregs, one of the things I proposed for a long time is if a player's been with you, say, for 6+ years, and you set him to an extension, a portion of that extension doesn't count towards the cap with you. If he leaves, it starts to count. And I'd like to see that. I think that would make a lot of sense. And the other thing is, those small market teams, in a lot of cases, don't need a salary cap. They need more. Mm-hmm. They need more money from the big teams. They need better. They need better revenue sharing.
No, that's fair. And it, so again, maybe one goes with the other, right? Yeah. And I'd be certainly supportive of that because look, you know, when you look at some of these smaller market teams, hey, I'll throw it out there: the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, there's word on the street. Not that you're going to get anyone from Arizona to verify this, but. Their target is a $65 million salary cap and $50 million in payout cash going into next season. So that's why you're seeing the Connor Garland trade speculation. Legit, he's available. You know, you can appreciate why they want to move away from Oliver Ekman-Larsson and some of the other bigger contracts. But, you know, it's a tough world to compete at any level, let alone a competitive one, when your salary is $50,000 cash and you're playing with a payroll of or a cap of $65 million.
Well, it seems pretty competitive right now in terms of trying to acquire Zach Hyman. You tweeted a few hours ago that the belief is that 7 years is the target and could climb as high as $5.5 million a year. Are you surprised at all with the term or the money?
Well, and look, I mean, let's be prepared to amend anything at any time until 10 is put to paper and he's under contract, right? 5.5 times 7 seems a lot for Zach Hyman to me, but I also appreciate he's a heck of a hockey player and he's going to make the Edmonton Oilers better if they can get a deal done. You know, the quicker they can get that deal done, that depends on what sort of arrangement they can make via trade with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't think that the Maple Leafs have the same idea of what the compensation should be that the Edmonton Oilers do. I'm sure Edmonton, Kenny Holland is going into conversations with Kyle Dubas thinking it's going to be a sixth or seventh round pick. And I don't think that Dubas feels that way. So that in and of itself has to play out. But look, you know, if it really is down to two teams, and it really is down to one team being Edmonton and Toronto is kind of there, as the home club, then is there really a risk or a gamble in Holland and the Oilers waiting until July 28th where they can sign the maximum 7-year term, but then there's zero compensation and there might not be a whole lot of risk in that. But if the money is 5.5 or higher, maybe the Oilers want that 8th year to bring the AAV down a little bit. And the only way of getting that 8th year is for the Toronto Maple Leafs to sign Zach Hyman and then trade him to the Edmonton Oilers.
Darren, let's just game plan this for a second. Okay, Edmonton gives him an offer, 7 years, $5.5 million. So that's $38.5 million total. For the Leafs on an 8-year deal, that's $4.8 million, just a shade over $4.8 million. Is anything in that range doable for them, or is that out of their reach?
Right now, I think it feels like it's out of their reach. I still think that there's at least a hint of hope, Toronto related. But it also comes down to, you know, some of the framework of the contract. Right, Gordon? And what I mean by that is, you know, what about the no-move clause and the protection clauses? And, you know, maybe Toronto is comfortable going with a longer term, a maximum term, provided they have some flexibility to move Zach if the contract starts to get a little cumbersome by year 4, 5, or 6 or whatever it is. I feel like it's a long shot, but I think anything under 5 for the Toronto Maple Leafs is worth more conversation about at this stage.
You know, and Dregs, you know, Zach Hyman's going to go out and get the best deal possible for him, and no one would begrudge him for that. There's got to be an element to a fit, though, for him as well, given how he plays. Like, I just think of, look at the Taylor Hall situation. And I don't know if he's leaving money on the table somewhere else, but it worked in Boston. And that's got to be part of the decision for Taylor Hall. Do you hear the same from Zach Hyman's camp, that obviously they want their the best deal, but he has a certain skill set that works with certain teams better than others?
Well, I mean, if you know, again, if what we believe is going to happen happens, he's going from one pair of at least superstar status players in Matthews and Marner to another in McDavid and Draisaitl. Aside from moving away from home, that's a pretty slick transition if you're Zach Hyman. And, you know, who knows the possibilities that might come along with that. I mean, are you playing with McDavid? Are you playing with Draisaitl? Do they slide Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to center? Are you with him in the top six? I mean, there's so many things that from a hockey standpoint have to be intriguing for Hyman. He spent time with those guys, you know, with the Oilers, that is. I'm not going to get specific to with who. You know, I think you can assume that there was a discussion, a meeting with Holland in Edmonton yesterday. He toured the city, and as Gord knows, Edmonton's a beautiful place to visit this time of year. Mm-hmm. Visit it in January, it's not as nice.
Well,
but, you know, it's going to be a very competitive hockey club.
Yeah, and you know what, Driggs? I think part of that is, and Ken Holland knows this better than anyone, Detroit's not exactly a magnet for people. But when you're winning, look, Duncan Keith told the Hawks he'd only wait for one team, Edmonton. And so if you're winning and you have good players, it becomes more attractive, right? I mean,
absolutely.
If you're gonna dig the puck out, you might as well dig it out for guys who might do something.
Yeah,
yeah. I 100% agree with that, and I believe that. That's why I said I don't see that there's much risk if the Leafs and the Oilers can't come to terms on what the compensation should be for a trade. I don't know. I mean, I don't think that any team is going to magically surface that is going to woo Zach Hyman. I think then at that point, maybe the Toronto possibility becomes more of a reality. But there's a lot of work, I think, that the Maple Leafs have to do, as we've already discussed. The next best bet, again, is the Edmonton Oilers. And he's earned the right, by the way, to push for the extra dough. I mean, every unrestricted free agent has earned that right to see what the market is going to provide. And, you know, Zach Hyman has identified Edmonton because of the fit here. You know, it's not like the Oilers are the only team in the league that wants to get their hands on Zach Hyman. There's probably 15 others. Mm-hmm. It's just he seems to be, you know, and seems to feel like that's the best fit there. So there's work to get done, but it feels like enough talk has taken place with Hyman involved, the agent Todd Reynolds, obviously the Oilers, to some degree the Maple Leafs, that it's not likely going to derail from Edmonton at this stage.
Joined by your hockey insider, Darren Dreger. And since Gord brought up the Red Wings, I'll bring up Alex Nedeljkovic. Mm-hmm. Seems like a pretty shrewd move by Steve Yzerman.
I would think so. And that shouldn't surprise anyone, you know, because Yzerman historically slides under the radar and makes some interesting ads. And for me, this is one of them. You know, there's some head scratching around the Carolina Hurricanes as to why it came to this. Nedeljkovic has arb rights, and it sounds like his ask reportedly was in the vicinity of 3.5, which Tom Dunnan and the Carolina Hurricanes just weren't willing to buck up with. So when you go to arb, you know, you risk that award being that or potentially more. And then at that point, you know, what are you left with? You walk away and get nothing? Well, you're not going to do that. So, right. You know, every team has a breaking point on the player. This one is a little bit strange, to be fair, but Steve Yzerman swoops in and takes sound advantage of it. And then to pay what he paid on Peck and the right Jonathan Bernier, who's soon to be an unrestricted free agent, I mean, he really paid a third-round Peck. And then he gets a deal done at 2.5 and 3.5 on a two-year deal for Nedeljkovic. So I think this is tidy work by the general manager of the Red Wings.
Let me ask you about this. A lot of talk about the Seattle expansion draft. In 2017, Vegas made 10 draft consideration deals, so a deal where they got an asset in exchange for not taking a certain player and taking someone else instead. And then Vegas made a series of deals in the next few days, four of them, in fact, the day after the draft. But we've seen one trade so far and no draft consideration trades. Why do you think that is?
You know what? I think it's twofold, Gord. One, Ron Francis, as you know, is not an overly aggressive general manager. And that's not, I'm not stating that as a criticism of the management of Ron Francis. That's just not the way he goes about business. He's very, very methodical, and he's extraordinarily patient and conservative in that process. And I feel like that's been his approach since being named general manager for the Seattle Kraken. His asking price was exceptionally high. Of every general manager who was trying to get Ron to push away from a player they didn't want to lose. And by high, I mean, we're talking about a first-round draft pick and a third-round draft pick as part of a package. That's just to move away from a player who that club just didn't want to have to expose. And the second part of this is pretty obvious. You know, when the Vegas Golden Knights came into the league, the managers didn't really know what to expect. They didn't have a whole lot of time to process, to put their staff onto it, to pour through all of the expansion details, the restrictions, all of that, and to apply it to the depth within their roster. And so this time around, they've had lots of time. And I honestly, Gord, I don't know about you, but I couldn't find a general manager who didn't say, you know what, I'm going to lose a good player. I'm just accepting that I'm losing a good player. I'd rather lose one piece, which, yes, is a good player, as opposed to at least two pieces, maybe more, to keep Ron Francis away from that player I don't want to lose. Well, so, you know, that's just the way it boiled down, I think.
And Greg, to your point, I think a lot of GMs that made those draft consideration deals in 2017 regretted them.
For sure.
I mean, you know, it's certainly, I mean, you couldn't have predicted that some of those guys would break out the way they did. But, man, I mean, you know, like the first-round pick to take the Clarkson deal, the first-round pick to take the Garrison deal, you know, all the things they did to, it was a, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised that there wasn't more action today. I mean, there was some. And there'll be more around Seattle moving forward. You know, they've got a stockpile of defense, and that seems to be the strength of their roster right now. They're going to have to add some pieces up front. They're competitive, but who's scoring goals? You know, for Seattle Kraken out of the gate, their goaltending is young. So, look, there's a lot of time, but right now they're shifting their focus to round one tomorrow and then the rest of the NHL draft on Saturday, and then they've got free agency and all of those things. So they haven't closed shop by a long shot, but it just felt like when the freeze lifted at 1 o'clock Eastern, we were going to learn a lot more. But, you know, there were some deals. It was an interesting day, and you know, Francis is going to sign free agent, but I'd be surprised if Jaden Schwartz doesn't end up in Seattle as an example. So there's still a lot of work to be done. I just thought that Seattle might be a little bit more active today.
A lot of work to be done. That could be your motto. Got the draft tomorrow.
Oh, no kidding.
Draft Saturday. Free agent frenzy. Keep that phone plugged in and charged and ready to go, Dregs. We appreciate you coming on the show, and enjoy the weekend.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
There's our hockey insider, Darren Dreger, getting set for the NHL draft, which begins tomorrow. We're in the in-between of the expansion and the entry draft and then the free agent frenzy, and then maybe he takes some time off. I don't know.
Yeah, we didn't even get to Montreal, and just the news from Montreal today, you know, Mark Bergevin, the GM, was clearly shaken, saying that Shea Weber won't play this season and likely won't play again. And just what a...
You just think of how well he played in the postseason and what he must have been going through.
Right, but just what a... I mean, there's literally no one who's been around Shea Weber, from management to coaches to teammates. I've literally never heard anyone say a bad word about him. Literally.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just what you get is a sense of reverence about him as a player, as a person. You know, guys in Nashville talk about he's a way better passer than you know. You know about the shot. You know about the toughness.
You don't think of that when you think of Shea Weber.
And it's funny, you know, you think about the first time you saw someone.
Yeah.
And for me, it's usually the World Junior is the first time I see a player. But in his case, we went to Kelowna after the fires in 2003. So we went the following season for a fundraiser to raise money for the fire victims. And part of the thing was we ran a kids' hockey clinic, and then we we were on the ice with the Kelowna Rockets for their practice. And so we go out on the ice, and this freight train goes by me. And then he starts shooting pucks, and they're rockets. And I said to Mark Habscheid, who's the coach of Kelowna, who's that guy?
Yeah.
He's that Shea Weber. He's a second-round pick in Nashville. And I said, a second-round pick? He'd broken his leg, I think, in his draft year. He didn't play a lot in his draft year, and he kind of slipped down in the draft. I think Bergeron went in the second round of that draft. Patrice Bergeron went in the second round of that.
Was that like the draft?
Yeah, the 03 draft.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the reasons it's such a great draft, those guys all went back to junior into college. But Weber was, so you're watching this guy, and the goalie for Kelowna said he's not allowed to really shoot at me in practice. We don't let him do that.
Right.
And so of course in the World Junior in 05, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He is just it's just so sad because doesn't sound like it's ending on his terms. And you could see it after, you know, the last game of the
final. The tears and the emotion. Like,
you could see there was more to it than just losing a playoff series.
Yeah.
He knew.
I've been told we have to break because our next guest needs to go to bed.
What? Oh, yes, of course she does.
Andy Petrillo, host of Leafs Lunch.
She's going to be up in the middle of the night.
Host of the Olympics, will join us when we return on Overdrive on TSN 1050 and the TSN app, and also on TSN 2. I know why we're playing this. Mullins is catering to everybody today.
He really is, pandering to the crowd. There's nothing more pathetic than pandering to our great audience of wonderful people.
Yes, that's right. And I'm going to be short here with this introduction because our next guest needs to go to bed. She is the star of Leafs Lunch, the star of the Olympics. She keeps Gord in line when she needs to. Andy Petrillo joins us on Overdrive. Hi, Andy.
Marky Mark, I have to say, Aerosmith is like a lullaby to me. And I can't remember if I told Malls that Deuces Are Wild is actually my favorite Aerosmith song, or he just completely lucked out with that. But I appreciate
He's nodding his head. Yes. He knows.
So he remembers these things, which is great. And yes, I'm ready to go Betty bye in a few more minutes here. Well,
I'll be doing the same
halfway
tomorrow. So
what's your shift, Andy?
So my shift is I'm up 2:30 a.m. Every day because I also have a routine, Gord, and I need to honor my routine of, you know, waking up and, you know, doing some push-ups and sit-ups and having a coffee and having my overnight oats. And then I walk across the street and I'm in the makeup chair by 4 a.m. And then we are on the air at 6 a.m. till noon every day. So
6 a.m. to noon.
That's evening. Yeah, so that's evening. Not bad. Oh, jeez. That's evening time in Japan. So when I was in Pyeongchang, it was roughly the same, 13, 14 hours ahead. So my shift there, I was on locally 8 p.m. at night to 2 a.m., which is right up my alley because I'm a night owl.
Yeah.
Now, even though it's nighttime in Japan, it's morning time here. Mm-hmm. Everyone who works this shift, you deserve raises.
Well, I'll be doing the same, but on TSN. We are partners. We're not competing. But what do you like from an athletic standpoint? Because you can go in a million different directions with what's going on in the world and what's going on in Japan. What is the storyline for Canadians going into the Olympics that you're the most excited to cover?
Oh, geez. First of all, I think we would be naive in not saying that, you know, I mean, COVID is a story, but maybe not in the way that some people would cover. Like news outlets, of course, they're going to cover, you know, whenever there's a positive test or anything like that. But the way I would almost cover COVID is how athletes are emerging from this. Like we've all had our butts kicked from, you know, this pandemic, and all of us have found ways to focus on something to try and get us through it, right? Whether it's completely, you know, adapting and changing your business, whether it's diving more into family time, right? And for these athletes, their focus to get themselves, you know, out of this and to keep their minds positive was to always keep an eye on this start date. Mm-hmm. Yes, when it was postponed and they found out the new date and the opening ceremony was July 23rd, this was what they hung on to. This is what, you know, things like this is what the world has worked towards, right? This is why, you know, people are abiding by rules and getting vaccinated and protocols in place, right? It's so we can start getting to these types of moments where you do feel like you can start to emerge. So that's how I would look at that. I think, you know, it'd be just foolish to ignore the fact that COVID does obviously have an impact on this. And then there's the typical no fans in the stands, no family could travel. But to your point about, you know, the athletes and these incredible stories, honestly, Canada is so strong. Like, we're sending 370 athletes. It's the largest contingent since the 1984 LA Games. 225 of those athletes are women. This, for the first time ever, is the most gender equal games. Women are at 49% participation. That's overall. So, you know, near equal there. And that's up from 46% in Rio. So it's so, you know, incredible, that type of storyline. It's incredible that the Canadian women led the way as well for moms, and saying, just because I'm a mom doesn't mean you get to punish me as an athlete, right? From Mandy Bujol, you know, fighting. She's a boxer, and she fought. You know, she fights literally and figuratively to be at these Olympics. And Kim Gauthier as well, with her newborn and nursing and being able to bring her baby there. Canadian women, Canadian moms were at the forefront of that. And then go to the field of play. Pick your warrior, right? Yeah. From Andre DeGrasse to Penny Oleksiak to Sarah Pavin and Melissa Humana-Paredes, the first Canadians ever to be crowned world champions in beach volleyball. Jenna Bell trying to go for that individual medal in diving. There are just so many incredible stories across the board.
Andy, tell us about the form of Andre DeGrasse and Penny Oleksiak heading into these games.
So Andre DeGrasse, he's been running on the Diamond League circuit the last, a lot of these athletes, I know people when they tune into the Olympics, you know, they see them once every 4 years, but they do compete on a regular basis. And for track and field athletes, that's the Diamond League. And he's gone to a couple stops already, Gordon. He's been on the podium quite a bit, way more so in the 200 meter. In the 100 meter, he's hovering around that 10 second mark. He needs to get under 10 seconds. The Americans are just like a factory of fast sprinters, right? So we know Usain Bolt's retired. Who's going to take the crown? Christian Coleman, the American, who was the 2019 world champion, has been banned for missing doping tests. But Trayvon Bromell, Q, Ronnie Baker, like, these are guys who are consistently running under 10. Bromell at the U.S. Olympic trials ran 9.78. So DeGrasse needs to get there, Gord, if he wants to get on the podium in the 100 meter. But he has been pretty consistent in the 200. As far as Penny Oleksiak, she's been very open about being 16 years old, winning four medals in Rio, and the pressure that came with that, right. The expectations that came with that. And she's emerging from that. She's finding herself again. She blew it out of the water at the Canadian Olympic trials. And I mean, and I love her sass. She's like, go ahead, count me out. Go ahead, do it again. So I love that. She's coming in strong, and she's coming in with swagger, and I can't wait to see what she can do in the pool.
Joined by the host of Leafs Lunch, joined by the host of the Olympics on CBC, it's Andy Petrillo. You pointed out that Melissa Humana-Paredes and Sarah Pavin are world champions in beach volleyball. That is a sport that gets a lot of popularity every 4 years. You know, and Canada... You know, you think back to 1996 and Marquise and John Child winning bronze and how it sparked the popularity of that sport in this country, but we haven't medaled since then. Mm-hmm. I don't want to play it off that they have pressure on them, but how big it would be for the sport if they do medal at the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a popular sport in the summer games regardless, right? I mean, how do you beat literally your views are the beach, mm-hmm. sand, ocean, outside, it's one big party, music is going. So it's always a popular sport, you know, to begin with. And we know the Americans, the Brazilians, those are typically, you know, the countries that will dominate in this sport. But you have a Canadian duo who's going in. And I think so. The rankings were constantly changing. They might be going in ranked number two now. But this was, you know, they were holding on to the number one ranking in the world, you know, for the last few years. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I think it will definitely kickstart a little bit more. It's tough, right, Mark? Because I think a lot of times it depends sometimes on the country you're in. We don't get a lot of summer, unfortunately, yeah. Right? So people who really want to get, you know, are diehards into beach volleyball, want to get into it, that will, you know, you have to move, basically. I mean, even Sarah Pavin and Humana Paredes, they don't live here, right? They'll come once in a while, but you got to be in hot places, which some people might actually say, Andy, that's not a bad thing. If I want to take up beach volleyball and go move to L.A., that might actually be right up my alley. But yes, I mean, it's just, again, the Olympics, and this is what's so special about it, to your point, Mark, is that people will be exposed to sports they're not normally exposed to, and suddenly they might turn around and go, I actually like that sport, and it piques an interest. And maybe they do want to get involved, or maybe they just want to follow it as a fan. But that's what the Olympics do, is they offer up on the menu sports that we don't typically see on our airwaves.
Well, you are the host of Leafs Lunch, so I should get your thoughts on the Leafs right now, and specifically Zach Hyman. It is not a done deal, but it seems like we're getting closer and closer to Zach Hyman becoming a member of the Edmonton Oilers. How do you feel about the Leafs having to make that decision and saying, you know, thanks for everything, but and you earned that deal, we can't afford it, or we're going in a different direction. As someone with the style that he played, how do you view that that move? Zach Hyman looks like he's going to be a member of the Oilers.
Well, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. I mean, you obviously look at the guy who's, you know, been the heart and soul as well of this team. He's been that type of player. Like, here in the Toronto market, I just find that, you know, you love your blue-collared players, right? You love your Wendell Clarks. Like, that's why they, you know, love your Darcy Tuckers and your Ty Domies. And, you know, I mean, obviously he's not a pugilist in that sense, but he's that blue-collared player. And Toronto Maple Leafs fans just gravitate towards that. So, of course, if he leaves, he's going to be missed. But at the same time, I think, you know, we've evolved in the sport in general to also kind of let go a little bit of that nostalgia. Well, he's a hometown kid. He grew up a Leafs fan. Of course, he's going to want to take a pay cut. He's going to want to take the hometown discount. Mm-hmm. That may have been believed, and that may have been the case, and in some instances may still be the case. But I don't think fans begrudge a player anymore to say, I need to capitalize when I can. Because we know the sports world, be it professional, be it high-performance amateur, you know, the sports world uses and abuses you when it can and then spits you out and then goes to the next, you know, athlete coming on through. So make your money while you can. You know, do your thing while you can. I just don't think we begrudge them anymore. And I also think people saw this writing on the wall. We all know. I mean, I heard you guys, you had Kyle Dubas on earlier. He knows his cap situation. He knows what they can afford. They know the situation they're in. Zach Hyman knows that too. The Leafs fans know that too. So I think it was always kind of an understanding that this would happen. What I will say, and this is just my own expectation, and perhaps it's because it's the conversation we had on Leafs Lunch. We always posed it as in, if you had to choose one, who would it be, Zach Hyman or Freddie Anderson? So I think I would be disappointed, maybe that's the word, if both ended up leaving. But then again, I'm saying that not knowing what Kyle Dubas can bring back in, because maybe he ends up doing something spectacular, and it's like, oh, okay, he plugged those holes, it's all good. Mm-hmm. But that, I think, is disappointing if you lose both, right? Because it was always kind of like, oh, either or, who could you afford and keep? But if both end up going, I think that could be a little bit of a kick in the pants.
Andy, Kyle Dubas made it very clear to us that he believes in the direction they've taken, and that he said, you know, a couple of times today he would bet everything on this group being successful. You are the host of Leafs Lunch. You are a Leaf fan. Do you still believe?
You know,
there's your answer.
Okay,
right,
we can cut it.
Thanks, Andy Petrillo.
You know what, Gord? I actually have you to is it blame, thank, or just you're the reason why I do believe, actually, because you're the one who constantly says, just because it hasn't been done before doesn't mean it can't be. So of course you have a bit of that belief. Of course you sit there and say, well, perhaps they can do it. Perhaps they can stay the course. And we use the example of the Washington Capitals, and everyone's like, you're not going to do it with this group, and you're not going to do it with Ovechkin. And they stayed the course, and sure, we can go back and nitpick and say, well, they made this little adjustment, that little adjustment, but I'm talking about the big players, right? So maybe you do. Maybe you do stay the course, and you have the belief. But I've also have been on record. I said this on Leafs Lunch, and this is when we had the conversation about, you know, Morgan Rielly, right? Because, I mean, I feel like everyone was on the table of, how do the Leafs make room? How do they trade something away to, like, you know, make this team better? And I said, of course I'd be sad to see certain players go and Morgan Rielly be one of them, but I also wouldn't, like, I just wouldn't complain about it anymore, because it's not what's been happening hasn't been working, so I wouldn't begrudge him for making a change. Let's put it that way. Gord, you make me believe. But at the same time, I just am like, you haven't gotten past the first round. Do something. Like, you just need to do something. So I'm kind of on the, either or, Kyle Dubas. I mean, I guess I do have faith. Maybe I am answering that question in a roundabout way. It's kind of like whatever he does, I feel like I have faith. So how about that? I'll be the first to say that.
I don't want to shatter her illusions, but I'm not sure that's what I meant.
I was just going to say, wow, drawing inspiration from Gord Miller as Gord just smashes it right now.
I think the second half of the statement is just because it hasn't been done before doesn't mean it can't be done, but there's a reason it hasn't been done before.
No, I stopped listening.
Yeah, I was going to say, she tuned you out, which happens, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, Andy, we'll let you get to bed. Good luck with the Olympics. I know it's a grind. I know it's a big haul, but this is also a time that the whole nation gets to see you shine, like we get to see you shine on a daily basis. So enjoy the Olympics, and maybe I'll actually see you in person when the games are done.
That is definitely a hope once I get back onto a proper sleeping schedule. My friend, have a good one. Have a good Olympics yourself. Gord, have a good, I think you're going on vacation. And we'll see, we'll see everybody in August.
Okay.
Take care, Andy.
Sounds good. There's Andy Petrillo, host of Leafs Lunch and host of the Olympics on CBC. You inspire people, Gord. What can I say?
That's me. You'll have fun. I mean, it's great. I mean, I was lucky to host the Olympics on site in Sydney. Mm-hmm. So I was on during the day in Sydney, which was fantastic.
Which everyone says is like their favorite Olympics. A lot of people do it.
It was the last Olympics before 9/11.
9/11, yeah.
And so everything changed after that. And obviously, it was a tremendous Olympics. I would say this. There's lots of pessimism before these games. There's always pessimism before the Olympics. There's always. Now,
sure.
Things are obviously different this time around with COVID, but I was in London in 2012 when they weren't going to work. It wasn't going to happen. You know, I was even in Sydney, is the traffic going to be? That was the first one where they put all the venues in one place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the traffic's going to be terrible. It's not going to work. You know, is Salt Lake City going to come off? You know, remember flying in there the day of the opening ceremony and people not sure it was going to, you know, is there going to be a terrorist attack? So once the games get going, it will be different with no spectators. You can't hide from that. There's no question.
There's a reason why you brought up Andre DeGrasse, because he will, you know, knock on wood, be in the finals for the 100 meters, and that is the marquee event.
There's nothing like it.
And you called it in 2012, that building with the energy, and you know, those the competitors are going to be fantastic, but you can't replicate the energy of that building.
So it goes from being, I mean, at the Olympic, I was in Rio for the 100 meters as well, and you go to a stadium with 110,000 people in it that is dead quiet. I mean, it's completely quiet. And then the gun goes off and this roar goes up.
Yeah.
That is just, it's like nothing you've heard in your life. And it's just a, and we'll miss that. But I think we need this. I think we need a sense of normalcy. I'm concerned about, you know, the NHL schedule's been released. I'm concerned about whether or not this is going to be normal this year. You know, like, are we going to Nashville? Are we going to Tennessee with the Delta variant running wild in some southern states? Are we going there? I don't know that. And I think...
Well, I don't think we are. I think the answer is, you know, when the NFL, and I know that they're trying to promote players to get vaccinated, but when they're saying, you know, when or if an outbreak happens and you're not vaccinated and it's clearly from that group on your team, you'll be penalized financially and also in the standings.
Yeah.
So you have to be prepared that it's not going to be, I don't know if life is normal, to use that term that we use all the time, but whatever the new normal is, you have to keep in mind what COVID-19 and what this virus can do.
I'm not aware of any NHL players that refused to get vaccinated last year. I don't know of any. I think it was pretty much unanimous they got it done. So, but the question is going to be everyone around them.
Yeah.
You know, the arena workers, just, security.
And do certain, yeah. I don't know if they'll go to a bubble, but
I'm not doing that again.
Yeah. The way that you act as a team in Toronto or Edmonton might be different in Buffalo, in New York, or L.A.
Florida,
same sort of thing. So you brought up the schedule. Let's take a break so we can talk about the schedule.
Right.
And how the Maple Leafs, they're off to a flying start with this schedule. A back-to-back. We'll talk about that as we wrap up Overdrive on TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Well, we're not ending the show on a whimper.
No.
The music, the news. It's always nice when we can wrap up a show with some news, right?
So the Leafs schedule's out. The NHL schedule's out. Mm-hmm. The Islanders are going to open how many straight in the road?
13
because the rink's being ready. Seattle's going to open a few on the road. They're going to open against Vancouver. But the Leafs schedule's out. So they open at home to Montreal October 13th. Next night in Ottawa. That's the first of their 13 sets of back-to-backs that they have. That's the same number they had in the last...
In the last
full schedule. A couple of the things that stand out for me, Mark, and you tell me what you think, but number one, they're going to want to make hay early on. They played 13 of their first 19 at home. So 13 of their first 19 games are on home ice. So they're going to want to bank some points early there. They finish tough. 10 of the last 15 are on the road.
Yeah, that's tricky. And going away from...
And three sets of back-to-backs in those 15 games.
Yeah. And not that that division is the worst for travel, but we all thought maybe there would be a kind of hybrid baseball style. Like, we saw it so much this past year, which it was easier to do because you stayed within
like
your division.
Would you go to Boston for two, or would you go to
Ottawa?
Ottawa for two, or
So we're not seeing that as much. The thing that point, you know, everyone wants to know about the Olympics, and so they're leaving that open, and so they have the pause in the schedule there to go to the Olympics, and it would essentially be added on to the All-Star break. So. First off, I'm thinking of if you're a player who doesn't make the All-Star game, it doesn't go to the Olympics, you got some time to yourself to go to wherever you want. But so they've left that open, and they've also left it open. If we don't go, then we will make adjustments to the schedule.
There's a second draft.
Oh yeah,
there's a second draft of the schedule that has no Olympic break.
Right. So anyways, let's hope that they go, and we all want the NHL.
Do you want them to go? Beijing.
I do. Yes. Yeah.
There's some mixed opinions on that. I think a lot of, you know, if you look at it from the perspective overall as a hockey fan, of course you want them to go. If it's your team going, some fans wonder about it, especially if you got a team that's got a lot of Olympians.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you know, like everyone always goes back to John Tavares hurting his knee at the Olympics, and you know, and while that's one out of every 100 guys that goes.
Well, PJ Axelsen broke his wrist and Torino came back. You know, the Bruins missed him and missed the playoffs. So,
but I think as a fan, I want to see Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon playing on this 100%. Level. 100%. I want to see Austin Matthews. I can only envision a Canada USA game at the Olympics, you know, given the talent and given, you know,
I think. Now, whether it happens or not, because most owners don't want to go.
Oh, I know.
Most owners do.
Well, what's in it for them? That's what they've been kind of fighting.
You're right, but the fact is that the largest corporations in the world spend billions of dollars to be associated with the Olympics. They don't do it out of the goodness of their heart. There has to be value to it. Now, you can't say on line 64 of your books, this is how much money you'll make from the Olympics, but clearly being there does bring something.
Well, and the argument for Beijing is the same one that they made for Nagano, is trying to attract more fans in that part of the world. We'll see if it works. But we've got a schedule. The Kraken have a team. We're getting closer and closer. We have a draft tomorrow.
I know.
Man, before you know it, you're going to be on a plane going to an arena. So enjoy the so-called vacation that Andy said.
I'll be sitting down tonight looking at what I think my schedule will be.
I'm sure you will, with great pride. It's always great to be working with you, Gord.
You too, bud.
Fun couple shows, and hopefully we do it later this summer.
That was good. Enjoy the Olympics.
I will. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on TSN 2.